The Tom Woods Show, episode 1901.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, if you've been meaning to get into Bitcoin, but you don't know what you're doing and you feel like you're never going to do it, I have the solution for you. It's Coinbits app. It rounds up your purchases and takes the spare change and automatically invests it in Bitcoin for you. And before you know it, you have a nice little portfolio. Turn it on and off whenever you want. Grab your money whenever you want. Check it out at coinbitsapp.com/woods. Hey folks, Tom Woods here. I'm joined today by Florida State Representative Anthony Sabatini, who also happens to be running for United States Congress. We'll talk about that. But I think it's safe to say that Representative Sabatini is probably the most notorious member of the Florida legislature. Very outspoken, and he has been absolutely on the right side of every issue pertaining to COVID, which means, as a relatively new member of the legislature, that he is willing to defy basically everybody, which includes, by the way, the establishment of the Republican Party, no surprise. So we're going to have some fun talking to Anthony about what that's been like and what the future holds. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. It's awesome.
You are, let's put it this way, the most interesting member of the Florida legislature. I think it's safe to say that, at least from my point of view, you're the most interesting one. I was glad to have a chance to meet you at the end of last year. And there are a bunch of things I want to ask you about. Obviously, Florida is a less frustrating place to be a state legislator. I've had a gentleman from California who was trying his darndest to bring sanity to California, and that was very, very frustrating. First of all, what's your background? I mean, you're a pretty young guy, and now not only are you, let's say, a major name in the Florida legislature, but you're running for U.S. Congress.
I am. My background is kind of interesting. I wasn't really a born conservative, born liberty guy. I got there through experience. I grew up in Central Florida in Lake County, went to University of Florida for college, and, you know, was pretty politically uninvolved, pretty neutral. But what happened is I moved for a job. I moved to New York City about a year after college. And it was being in a foreign environment, a really progressive, liberal environment that kind of woke me up. I called my road to Damascus conversion to politics. And I started as just a kind of normal Republican, then moved further to the right. And now I do consider myself a libertarian. But it all started with just, you know, living somewhere where the philosophy of government that was in place was the opposite of the one I believed in. I had to be a fish out of water, I guess, to experience that. So I moved back, went to law school, got on city commission in the town of Eustis, and then ran for the state house right after that. And I've been in the house for 2.5 years.
And so what part of Florida are we talking about?
So it's Lake County. It used to be a rural county to the west of Orlando. Now it's pretty much just a big exurb, suburban bedroom community to Orlando.
Okay. How many people are there in the Florida State Legislature?
We get 120 members in the House, 40 in the Senate. So each of us House members represents 185,000 people, roughly.
Okay. I was asking that because I found out that in New Hampshire, it's something like 400. And given
yes,
the population of New Hampshire, that's a lot of representatives. So I was wondering about that. Okay. So you're kind of a lightning rod. I mean, you're not shy about expressing your opinions. And obviously, I know where you stand on lockdowns and stuff like that, but give me your frank appraisal of Ron DeSantis.
Well, I think he's great. And that's come from a kind of a Puritan. I think he's doing a really good job. I mean, as a guy who truly loves liberty, loves freedom, I'm always pushing him to go a little bit further to the right, a little bit more aggressive in his approach. And I have been since the beginning. I mean, I came out the first week of COVID in middle of March. I started tweeting and speaking publicly saying, don't close the schools, don't close the businesses, no lockdowns, no mandates, no face masks, no curfews, no anything. And I was very, very bold and strident in that approach. And for two reasons. One, it wasn't the right thing to do. It violated my principles. But second of all, there was no data to support any of it. So in the beginning, I was a little disappointed by DeSantis because he was sort of going along to get along with a lot of the Southern state Republican governors. But he did decide to break away from the pack and push back very firmly. And I gotta congratulate him because, you know, there was a lot of pressure on him and he, you know, he did the right thing. It just took a little bit of time, but he's, like I mentioned, he's really picked up speed. He's pretty strident at this point in fighting the false COVID narrative and he's done a great job.
I have a theory that I can't prove, but that I feel pretty solid about it, that when CPAC took place down in Florida, which I'm pretty sure is a first. Mm-hmm. We had a speech by DeSantis. He was received extremely enthusiastically, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And it became clear at that point that he was going to ride his COVID record to political stardom. I mean, in 2020, there were times when Andrew Cuomo thought he had the better of DeSantis, but it was clear and unambiguous by late 2020, early 2021. And then all of a sudden, Governor Abbott of Texas all of a sudden announced everything's opening up.
Yeah.
Regardless of what anything he might have said in the past about what metrics they need to look at, everything's opening up. My theory is that he realized this is a political winner, and I'm not going to let this schmo from Florida take all the accolades. I want to share that. That's my theory. And then since then, Abbott is now, I just saw today, he's saying that school districts cannot mandate masks on students. And that goes even farther than I think DeSantis himself has gone.
Correct. That is accurate. I think your theory is right. DeSantis, you know, it's two forces happening at once. One is he is principled. He is a liberty guy. He's a freedom guy. And that's pushing him to do the right thing. But the other, I think you kind of mentioned or alluded to, is the pragmatism. He saw it as, you know, if I really get in front of this thing and separate myself from the pack of other so-called conservative or Republican governors, then I can really place myself as a front runner for the White House. I mean, don't fool yourself. This is a guy who's very, very ambitious and very certain about his political future. So it was those two things, the pragmatism and his actual fundamental belief and freedom, that combined, I think, made him do the right thing. And frankly, you know, I'm very happy, but at the same time, I'm just appalled by how bad all the other governors are. It's like, why aren't you following his lead? You should be following DeSantis' lead. And somebody dragged their feet. Abbott, I think you're very correct to mention he did a good job. And Noam, I mean, let's be honest, one of the least dense states, she obviously should have been doing what she was doing. But so many of the other southern states, Republican states, weren't following his lead. That was disappointing to see.
Well, I guess it makes me now want to ask, given that we're talking here about, by and large, Republican governors, let's talk about the Republican Party, particularly in Florida. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't follow this that closely. I was looking only at the governor. I was not really looking at the legislature. Mm-hmm. Where did the Republican Party stand on this? Were they squishy? Were you an outlier? What's the deal?
I say that when I go around the state, I'm touring the state right now, talking to a lot of clubs, giving them sort of a legislative debrief. We finished session 3 weeks ago, so I love to tour and talk to people about what we did, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And one thing I always tell people is, I say, if DeSantis wasn't the governor, Florida wouldn't be this rock star, amazing story of freedom that you see right now. Because the truth is that the governor really sets the tone. And the gentleman that he beat in the election was a guy named Adam Putnam. He is really the classic example of a squishy establishment, boring, low energy, you know, 1990s old classic country club Republican who would not have taken any political risks to try to preserve freedom and open up the state. So DeSantis did the right thing. The state itself, the legislature itself, and the legislative leadership is not nearly as conservative as DeSantis and some members like myself are. They're much more moderate. They embraced masks really heavily. They were all in for social distancing. They were fine with the lockdowns. You know, we did lock down. A lot of people forget Florida did lock down for about 3.5 weeks, which was 3.5 weeks too long. But, you know, DeSantis did the right thing by ending it very quickly and not really enforcing it in any significant way. But the fact is, we did it. The state party and the state legislative leadership was out of step with what DeSantis wanted, and they followed his lead, and that was good. But if you ask me, they should have disempowered the local public's political subdivisions. They really should have cut down the authority that the cities, counties, and school boards had starting last April of last year, over a year ago. And they chose not to. And I think that's a black mark on the state legislature's part. But so that's how I would kind of describe their posture. It's not where DeSantis is, but sort of they wanted to take cred once he did what he did and became sort of a star nationally.
Initially, you're a very recent addition to the legislature, when it was clear that you were not taking a squishy position, did you get in trouble with the Republican leadership?
That's actually kind of what happened. And what happens is, you know, the Republican Party, it's really no different from D.C. If they want to punish or diminish or hurt one of their own members, they don't always want their fingerprints on it. So when the committee assignments were renegotiated and everybody got new committees, I ended up symbolically with one less committee than other members in my class. And when I confronted the so-called legislative leaders of why this was the case. Well, it's just the way we, you know, shuffled the deck, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth is they punished me because of my very, very firm, bold stance against lockdowns, masks, curfews, and anything to do with it from the beginning. I mean, I basically, starting in June, launched a series of lawsuits. I filed about 15 different lawsuits at the city and county level challenging masks and curfews. And the state party at this point was totally embracing both of those interventions and were completely fine with masks and curfews. At this point, the lockdowns ended. And so I think they made the decision back then that they were going to try to punish me in my next legislative session.
But then as time went on, though, and it became clear that this is a winner for the Republicans, that DeSantis is the most popular Republican governor by a mile, and his, you know, how he did in the CPAC straw poll, other than Trump, he's way ahead of everybody. How did they change their tune? I assume they did eventually. What was that like?
Yeah, so they did change their tune and, you know, embrace Florida as a bastion of freedom and all of their, you know, sitting back and letting the local governments bully everyone and all the stuff that was happening went into the memory hole. I saw a t-shirt today that said, Florida never locked down. I was like, I'm sorry, that did happen actually for a month. And cities and counties were able to do extended lockdowns in the tri-county area of Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami, the three most dense counties where the county and city mayors were turned into legitimate tyrants and actually had people arrested and thrown into jail, Christian pastors, businesses, even homeless people who refused not to wear masks. It was pretty ugly down there. So all that sort of fell by the wayside. And now they've embraced this approach that DeSantis created, you know, later in the summer, sort of in the middle, late summer, and tried to pretend that that was the standard from the beginning. But the truth is the standard from the beginning was one of tepid response and letting, you know, erring on the side of more government. And that was just wrong. So it was, you know, I don't want to poke their eyes too much, but I try to remind people that what they did was wrong and it should be prohibited from ever happening again. I don't think these legislators can be trusted during the next so-called state or national emergency.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, when DeSantis, one of his press conferences, making one of his recent moves, one of the mayors, and I tweeted about this, and I can't remember who it was, of some Florida city, said, look, the real secret to the success of Florida has been the mayors who have actually taken the harsh steps that DeSantis refuses to take. And so, yeah, it is because of lockdowns and this and that. And now he's tying our hands, making it impossible for us to do that. Now, you know, I think you and I kind of know about the ineffectiveness of lockdowns and all this, but I'll just point out, I've spent about a week in the Panhandle recently, and it's a different place up there, as I'm sure you know, but it's a different place in terms of COVID stuff too. When I went to Publix, the major grocery store chain, more than half the customers were unmasked. When I went to Target, more than half the customers were unmasked. People were just returning to normal. Nobody was social distancing. People were right on top of each other practically everywhere I went. And from what I can see, there's no different health outcome in the Panhandle than anywhere else in the state.
Right. And that mayor you mentioned or alluded to was Mayor Rick Priceman, the city of St. Petersburg. One of the most awful and just worst sort of progressive, smarmy progressive mayors in the state of Florida. And, you know, my frustration with DeSantis was, like I mentioned before, that he wasn't disempowering these folks. And actually, I think really should have removed them from office. Christman went in front of a set of cameras in the media one day and said, I'm proud to have been the mayor that has issued motions and has enforced the lockdown the hardest statewide. So he was boasting about the fact that he was punishing and sending, you know, $500,000 fines left and right to people that had, you know, maybe one more person than the 50% occupancy limit allowed them. And so that was just awful and wrong. And of course, the bars, you know, the only real outstanding problem going late into the summer was that the bars were closed, actual liquor and beer and wine bars. And he, you know, Christ had made a point of bullying these bar owners that were just trying to allow be a couple people inside of their establishment. But back to the Panhandle, yeah, that's not just part of the Panhandle. Really, most of the sort of interior counties in the central Florida, like my county, Lake County, I mean, we're not a small county, 375,000 people, but it's a conservative Republican county that never did a county or citywide mask mandate or anything else. And yeah, I mean, it was nice coming home because there was no anything. And what's actually, once again, anecdotal, but real evidence here, it is real evidence out of the six counties around Lake County. So that's Osceola, Polk, Lake, Seminole, Sumter, a few others. The county with the least transmission, the least spread of COVID during the height of COVID during last summer was Lake County. And of course, it's not a coincidence, in my opinion, that it was the county that did the least, had the least government response, centralized government response to it. They just trusted people to choose their own tolerance of risk that they were willing to take. And, you know, the precautions and interventions that they believe should have been taken were personal and local level. You know, I think it's going to be a while till we see this, but I do think there's going to be evidence that the misuse of face masks drove COVID rates because of the rampant misuse. You know, washing it, using it, taking it off and on your face constantly actually drove COVID rates. And the fact that no one was wearing them in Lake County probably helped their rates.
Now, speaking of masks, you apparently sued some localities over masks. Tell us about that.
So that was an interesting time. So it was late May. Governor Sanders just ended the lockdown, which I was preparing a lawsuit for. I love the governor, but I was willing to literally stay, ironically, as a sitting legislator to end the lockdowns just to get it in court. But he did a good job and ended the lockdown fairly quick. And so I said, well, what's the next threat? What are they doing now? And as you remember, and your listeners will remember, they weren't doing the masks and curfew mandates early on. This is something they kind of shifted to after the lockdown, sort of unpopular early in the summer. And so I said, you know, maybe I'll sue on those. So people started calling me, and a very good libertarian friend of mine named David Levitt from Seminole County was the first guy to call me and say, hey, will you sue Seminole County for mandate, which makes it that if someone comes into my private business, I can be in trouble if they're not wearing a mask. So I said, certainly I'll do it. So we filed, and as you can imagine, my phone just started blowing up. I was receiving hundreds of calls a day nationwide. So we ended up filing 15 lawsuits. Here's the deal. We, in good faith, made the arguments that that what was happening was unconstitutional. But the problem is the legal standard, because the judiciary cares so little about personal liberty, in my opinion, that the legal standard is called rational basis. And the government can basically say, you know, we don't have any real evidence, but we think the mask might actually help. So we're not even going to show you empirical evidence. We're just going to claim that and then argue against your case. And then the judge will likely side with us because rational basis is such a low standard. So we weren't successful legally in getting the temporary injunctions early on, but we were successful in other ways. Three counties and cities said we're not going to file and create individual mandates because of the fact that they know, you know, Representative Sabatini was suing all these cities and counties. They don't want to waste time in litigation. We had two other cities put in amendments into their face mask order saying we're not going to affect nonprofits and religious establishments, or we're not going to prove to people that they have a religious or physical medical exemption. They can just cite the fact that they have a sensory issue and therefore they're not going to be required to wear it either. So there we had some wins. And I think the biggest win of all was that I was able to cross-examine a lot of these so-called scientific healthcare experts. And the media did a decent job of highlighting their testimony and reporting on their so-called testimony, which was basically them saying, hey, we don't have any real random controlled trial evidence. We don't have any real what's traditionally considered scientific evidence. We have what you call observational evidence. By that mean, we have a robot at a university that is like a sneezing machine. And we showed that if you put a face mask in front of it, that the droplets don't go as far. Right? Like these sort of like two-dimensional claims about face masks. It's like, okay, that's fine. But is there any evidence to show that the respiratory droplets, once they dissolve and go into the air, aren't able to infect somebody despite them wearing a mask? And, you know, that sort of evidence we were able to explore in the lawsuits, and that was helpful to get to the public because, you know, as you know, the media was never highlighting the inefficacy of face masks, social distancing, curfews, any of it. And so filing the lawsuits gave us a venue to highlight the lack of information, lack of evidence. And I think that did help with public dialogue. And I think it definitely helped push the governor and other politicians to start pushing back against the local government mandates because they realized there was no evidence.
Hey, folks, let's take a minute to thank probably one of the cleverest sponsors I've had, and that is Coinbit's app. I know a lot of you folks have been thinking, yeah, maybe I should get into Bitcoin and maybe there's a dip and now's the time to buy, but is now the time and I don't really know what I'm doing and I don't really want to shell out that much dough all at once. And so then you wind up not doing anything. But here's an easy way to do something that maybe you already want to do. Coinbit's app is a Bitcoin investing app that rounds up your everyday spare change and automatically invests it in Bitcoin for you. So, for example, you buy a cup of coffee for $2.75, Coinbits will round up to $3, take that extra 25 cents, and buy Bitcoin with it. So you set it, forget it, and start building up your Bitcoin holdings. It's done easily, painlessly, and anytime you want to stop doing it, just click a button and it's off and done. And you can withdraw your money anytime you want. So forget about deciding when to buy, how much, what platform to use. Coinbits takes all that away by automatically investing your spare change for you weekly. And you'd be surprised at how quickly that adds up. So check it out over at coinbitsapp.com/woods. That's coinbitsapp.com/woods. Do you have a sense of, this may be an unfair question, what DeSantis's next move may be? Because there are other things he could do that he hasn't done yet.
That's exactly right. I think he needs to continue the line of fight he has chosen to fight, which is the one against federal agencies that are trying to shut down the cruise ship industry. I think he's doing a good job on that. He should continue. I think the state should be a litigant in the appellate court in Texas in the 5th District Court of Appeal, where they're trying to extend these rent eviction moratoriums even further. I think that's a pure taking. I think it's sick and disturbing that we've destroyed that industry and told all these people, these landlords, that they're not allowed to collect income. I think that's one thing he should continue to do. But I think immediately and most importantly, he should immediately issue an executive order stopping the face mask on these children. I think it's dehumanizing. And I think it's disturbing what they're making these kids do, despite CDC guidance saying that you shouldn't even be wearing a mask inside at this point because of herd immunity and vaccinated people, et cetera. So that's what he needs to do immediately. Now, a month ago, he said, well, we'll do that next semester. Fall semester comes, no more masks. Or we're going to tell them not, no more masks. The truth is they should do it immediately. And Abbott put out an order saying it should end on June 4th, which is, 3 weeks away. Even that's too far. It should be immediately. It's just completely ridiculous what's happening. So that's, I think, that some of the things he could be doing very quickly.
What do you think about if you would have had to compare the, let's say, executive authority in a place like California and Florida? Because in California, you get the sense that the legislature is just completely eclipsed. It's like a puppet show of no significance. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think you guys can actually do things in the Florida state legislature. How would you describe that?
Absolutely. The legislature has an important role to play. I think there is a pernicious trend, though, across the country, both at the federal and state level, where, the opposite of what the founding fathers were writing about in the Federalist, that the legislative branch was going to be the strongest branch, the judiciary being the weakest, and, the executive being in the middle, but potential for harm being higher, is that the reverse has happened, that the legislative branch at the federal and state, even at the state levels, has become impotent. Somebody made a joke today on Twitter saying there are two branches of government in Florida. There's a judiciary and the executive, and there's now a new agency created within the executive branch called the Department of the Legislature that operates under its auspices. And the problem is the state legislature doesn't want to challenge a member of their own party. So even if DeSantis could be doing a better job, the so-called House of Freedom, the state house, which is supposed to be the people's house, more conservative, more Puritan, isn't going to push back. They are sort of a puppet show. The amount of votes that aren't calculated and whipped ahead of time and the amount of people willing to dissent against the legislative leadership is fairly low.
Talk to us about your congressional race. I mean, I don't know what the circumstances are, if it's an open seat or if there's redistricting going on and all this stuff. What are your prospects and what are the issues you're campaigning on?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, I'll answer my favorite question, which is the last one you answered first, which is I'm campaigning on just being a true principled government, liberty-oriented conservative, less government, less taxes, less political correctness, same sort of slogan approach I had at the state and city level. And that's really the heart of what I care about. It's just individual freedom. That's what I think is most important. But your listeners might know about the fact that redistricting is happening in every state in the nation right now, and that there's been a transition based on population trends of new congressional seats shifting to the South. So New York, Michigan, California have lost each a congressional seat, and Texas, North Carolina, Florida, and a couple other states have gained a congressional seat or two. Florida gets one. It's going to Central Florida, the fastest growing part of the state, which is what they call the Four Corners area of Osceola, Polk, Orange, and Lake County, where 40% of the new growth of the state is centered. And so that's up and down the I-4 corridor, which is sort of a political scientific fame because it's a traditionally purple area that could go either way in a presidential election. But that's where they're placing the new seat. It's actually where I live currently and represent in the state house. And so this new seat will be created later this fall, maybe even in the winter, probably maybe December. And so I'm filed for an occupied seat for now, but I'll be shifting to that new seat once the lines are drawn. And I have, I think, a very good chance of winning. I've raised already $250,000. I expect to get a lot of endorsements from important conservative institutions. I'm the only state legislator in the state of Florida with 100% rating from the American Conservative Union. And I have the highest lifetime rating from the Club for Growth. I'm hoping to get a lot of support from good conservative organizations at the national level, because I think it's a chance to get somebody who's a really principled conservative elected versus sort of another establishment boring shill that would have done like a lot of the Republicans did last summer, which is subsidized the lockdowns. All the, you know, other than Thomas Massie and a few of these congressmen that dissented, every time they voted for so-called, you know, bailout money or, you know, free checks and, you know, more government for states and local government, all these checks, the three different votes they had early in the summer, just subsidized the lockdowns. I mean, that was the worst part of what they did, is they made it easier for states to continue lockdowns by just saying, okay, well, here's some free money that you can give to everybody, whether they work in government or not, to continue to live under the lockdowns. They should have made the granting of that money, if they did vote up on it, which they, I don't think they should have, but if they did, they should have at least made it contingent upon opening up of the states and the absence of individual mandates. They didn't do that. And so they're solely responsible for subsidizing the lockdowns. And so for that, I don't think any of them, except for Massie and a few others, should be reelected.
Yeah, Massey's been great. But really, as you say, it's few and far between. It's unbelievable how bad they've been, and the stuff that they parrot and they expect us to believe, when we can see with our own eyes that the things that they predicted would happen obviously didn't happen. I mean, we can argue about Sweden all day long, but it's not the Black Death in Sweden. That's the point.
Yeah,
it's not the.
Yeah,
they might say, well, it's slightly worse than what. Okay. But if you're going to justify what you were demanding of people for over a year, Sweden better be a giant graveyard, and it's not. So how about some explanations for this? So it's incredible to me. But on the other hand, when I had Thomas Massie on the show, he was being somewhat charitable by saying, the fact is, a lot of the politicians were simply responding to the irrationality on the part of voters. A lot of them had been terrified into, but things as a chicken and egg thing, because I think a lot of the voters had been terrified by politicians. And so then they're terrified, and then the politicians have to do irrational things, even if there were a handful who might have been inclined to do something different. How do you break out of that?
Well, I think the key is to try to be a real leader and change the narrative, even if it means that you have to risk your own political demise. And what we've seen is that that doesn't always happen. I mean, Thomas Massie is the best example. Here's a guy that voted against these wildly popular bailouts. They had about an 80% approval rating when they occurred. He said, I don't care. You know, Donald Trump tweeted at him saying he was the worst, should be primary, et cetera. He gets primary. He still wins that race by 50 points. They want leaders. They want courage. They want boldness. We just need to choose congressmen that are going to try to change the narrative and fight back and not just give in to every temptation. Because what we find is that, yeah, that's what the people want right now. They've been misled by the media. But time goes by pretty quick. Things change pretty fast. And, you know, the only way that you're going to be able to do the right thing in the long run is by having the courage to constantly fight things that might be temporarily politically popular. So you just got to be, you know, the populace has to be better at choosing its leaders. And it's just not happening right now. I don't think those congressmen had to do any of that. I think that they simply were just going along to get along. And it caused more harm in the long run, because it made the response to COVID look bipartisan when really, in their hearts, most of the conservatives knew that they were causing permanent issues. I mean, they literally put the debt up $10 billion. They redefined the role of government in our lives in a very personal way, which was really, I think, the biggest harm of all. And then, of course, came up with this new concept that during any kind of so-called emergency, even if there's a 0.01% death rate, mortality rate, that the government can just do whatever it wants. So they caused a lot of really serious harm that is far worse than having lost an election or lost a majority in the Senate or White House or whatever.
I'm going to link on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/1901, to your page on the state legislature site, because it's got your contact information, your vital statistics and everything else. And also your Twitter. I was trying, I couldn't get there in time. Are you at Anthony Sabatini? What are you on Twitter?
I was lucky to get my own name. So it's at Anthony Sabatini.
All right. So I'm going to link to those things. Is there anything else you want me to link to? I mean, you must have a site for your congressional race.
Oh, yeah. Got a great one with great video from a great team that did one of Jim Jordan's videos. It's sabatiniforcongress.com.
Okay, sabatiniforcongress.com. All right, I'll put that on the show notes page also. Well, I guess I'm just going to say thanks for being the exact legislator I would have been in your shoes. I look at the votes you make and I think, yeah, that's how I would have voted. So good. I mean, you have to be the lightning rod and get all the anger and frustrated jerks out there. And I just sit here in the comfort of my home. So I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate that. It's very flattering. It means a lot. So thank you.
All right, everybody. I have a listener named Rebecca Day, who is a musician. And she's been a professional musician for the past 10 years. And she says, I've spent those years applying the theory of Austrian economics to my business practices. Well, how about that? She says, I have seen firsthand a destructive philosophy rampant throughout the creative arts industry, both economically and artistically. And she says that she's trying to promote a philosophy of reason and freedom at her website, which is called thefreemarketmusician.com. It covers business economics with a focus on creative entrepreneurship through the lens of Austrian economics. And she says it also focuses on using reason instead of emotion when it comes to running a business. And she says this is extremely hard for artists to do. So she's promoting free markets, free minds, and free speech at thefreemarketmusician.com. So go check that out. I know you're just going to love it. And of course, if you would like to get promotion of a website you're thinking of creating, get your hosting through my link and I'll help you out. Won't cost you a single extra cent, plus some other bonuses that are going to give you an unfair advantage as you get started. Get the details on that at tomwoods.com/publicity. Tomorrow, our old friend Marco Bassani from the University of Milan joins us. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.